Welcome to Marketing Thought Leadership, the podcast that offers insightful discussions on thought-provoking marketing topics. Here's the host of our show, marketing consultant, speaker, author, and educator, and the president of Leverage 2 Market Associates, Linda Popke.
Hi, this is Linda Popke, and welcome to our latest episode of Marketing Thought Leadership. We're here today with Joseph Bradley, who's the Global Vice President of the Digital and IoT Professional Services Organization at Cisco. And he's also the Senior Research Fellow for the Global Center for Digital Business Transformation at IMD. In these roles, he leads a team of multidisciplinary experts and technologists who help CXOs and government leaders transform into digital organizations. Joseph built the foundation for Cisco's Internet of Things strategy and the Internet of Everything practice by directing Cisco's influential research that determined $19 trillion of value associated with embracing the Internet of Everything. He previously led the research and economic strategic communications and operation functions for Cisco Consulting. Joseph has a long resume. He's been president of Uptake Technology, CEO at C3 Communications, and VP General Manager of the Data Communication Group at AT&T. He's built a reputation as the person that people turn to when companies need to know how to create systems where people and technology don't just coexist but work to benefit each other. And that's been his lifelong passion. Welcome, Joseph.
Thank you very much.
Okay, great. So, Joseph, you've written a book that's called Questioneering. And I'm just curious, what is questioneering and why is that important to us?
Questioneering ultimately says that if you want to drive breakthrough innovation, it's not about changing your answers, but fundamentally about ensuring that you're asking the right questions. And it's so critically important to ask the right question these days because the market is moving so fast, the pace of innovation is so quick that the cost of a mistake, the cost of misaligning yourself with customers, with your partners, with your employees, the stakes are very, very high.
So really, when people are worried about the answer, we should be worried more about asking the same question. Where did you kind of get the idea to focus on the question rather than the answer?
You know, we were doing an engagement, and it all had to do with what we thought was the most high-value question, which is how do you reduce the amount of time customers wait in line? And so We did this great IoT engagement. We solved the problem, and we found out that through our technology that we could predict 40 minutes in advance when a customer is waiting in line. And I'm telling this story about 10 years ago, actually, to my son and my daughter. And my son's a tech person, and he says, that's why I told my daughter, this is why you got to be in tech, and she's a liberal arts major. And my daughter looks to me, and she says, that's pretty cool, Dad, but I think you probably asked the wrong question. And I go, what are you talking about? It's a 13-year-old kid. What do you mean you asked the wrong question? And she said, you shouldn't have asked how do you reduce the amount of time a customer waits in line. You actually should ask how do you eliminate the lines. And I was sitting there going, oh, my God. And this is before we had the Apple stores, right? This is before we had this content. And so that's what really triggered me to say, your starting point is so important because it frames everything that follows. And if you get that starting point wrong, I think that's one of the things that I admired so much. You think about Steve Jobs, right? Steve Jobs did not rely upon customer surveys. And I think part of that reason is because Steve understood that really understanding what a customer needs as opposed to what they want has to do fundamentally with ensuring that you have enough listening infrastructure, you're intuitive enough to understand what is the right question I should be asking. So that's what kind of fueled the book Questioneering and got to me where I'm here today, some, 10 plus years later.
Wow. So sometimes talking to someone who was a liberal arts major, she looked at it in a very different way. Wow. So how does that apply to marketing?
When I think about what's happening in marketing these days, marketing, I think, has moved from truly a kind of event-based marketing, I think, now to a process of discovery.
Yep.
If you are trying as a marketing professional, it's not about tying and defining a customer experience. It's about emotionally connecting to your customers. In other words, it's fundamentally important that you have a firm grounding in what are the core questions I need to ask, and more importantly, how do I understand what my assumptions are so I can challenge what I believe to be true in order to get a clear understanding and pet perspective of what is it that would allow my customers to truly be emotionally connected to my product, to my service, or to my offering.
Wow. And that's a whole different mindset. I know, being a marketer for a long, long time, you're right. It's very different, because sometimes we start by saying, we've got this great product, we've got this great solution. How do we find the right people to buy it? But I think what you're saying is, let's go talk to the customers first and then figure out what we have to build, which is a very different mindset.
Yes. If you ask most marketing or business professionals, you said, you know, talk to me about customer experience. They'll tell you, well, I create a product and I add services around it.
Right.
And the output is the customer experience. What questionnaireing tells you is that you need to think about the customer experience as an input. It needs to be designed in the beginning. It's upfront. And it takes you through a questionnaireing process that says, how do I understand what I truly want to enable? How do I use data, emotion, and momentum to truly build a unique customer experience? And then I design the product and the services to deliver that experience. It's not an output, it's an input. And that's really, I think that's really fundamentally important to be successful given the rate of change that we have in digital age today.
I think you're absolutely right. It's a very different mindset, and it probably will make some old-time marketers very uncomfortable, which is probably why we should do it. And it's important to them. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So tell me, you talk in your book about a concept called the convergence edge. What is the convergence edge, and why do we care about that?
You know, the convergence edge basically says that if you want to understand what questions you should be asking about, you need to improve your listening skills. You have to have a formal listening infrastructure. And so if you're a marketing professional, what are those things you should be listening to? What am I listening for? The convergence edge says you should be listening for three things that will ultimately determine whether or not you can create and establish a valuable connection with your customers. You should be listening for data, be listening for emotion, mm-hmm. You should be listening for momentum. And when those three come together, they fundamentally create a unique opportunity to get deep insight into your customer. So you want to understand data, i.e. what is happening and what will happen in the future. What are your sources to provide you with raw data about what your customer is doing and what they will do? Emotion. How are you listening to those emotional elements that are critically important to your customer set? And then finally, momentum. What are your drivers? How do you understand the power of the crowd? What are people getting behind? What is your sources around that? And if you can identify and structurally have a formal listening infrastructure to be able to understand data, emotion, and momentum, where they overlap is where you have immense areas of opportunity to uncover the difference between a customer wanting something and a customer needing something.
So in a sense, what I think you're saying is we could, if we just kind of give the customers what they want, we would be building whatever happened before Steve Jobs came along. But then you have someone like Jobs comes along and says, here's the data, here's that we're listening to about what people might want, and here's what's driving things, and next thing you know, you have an iPad or an iPod or an iPhone or whatever.
Is this basically how you get
ahead of the trend?
You get ahead of it. I mean, I think it's, again, it's that old age, you know, Henry Ford, right? Okay, you know, if he asked his customers what they wanted, they would have said, I want a faster horse. No one would have said they wanted a car. Same thing. If you would have listened to, you know, marketing professionals and asked them, you know, would your customer ever want to have and watch TV on a separate device? And we're talking about, no, I watch TV on my TV. I wouldn't want an iPad. What are you talking about?
Right.
I wouldn't want a phablet. You know, it's, again, it's the ability to understand really what people were looking for is, given the shortness of time that I have in a day, how do I get more connected, right? How do I feel more connected? How do I feel more inclusive? How do I get greater participation in what I'm doing? That's a totally set of different questions that if you don't really truly get that broader perspective and organize your listening into those data, emotion, and momentum, you'll miss it. And I think a good example of that, I think, is if you think about the amount of time it took in the U.S. for mobile payments to really take off, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't really until Apple changed the equation and said, well, yeah, you know, you could argue that it's more convenient to pay with your phone, but actually, we're going to talk about the security element. Why would you give your identification, your ID, to a stranger at a store who you have no idea who they are? Why are you doing that? Why are you doing that? If you use our solution, you never have to exchange. They never see your driver's license. There's never an exchange of that information with someone who you don't trust. They saw a need and tied a market to an emotional need of security and safety, right, that was happening on the internet. And that is, again, something that if you're not in tune with listening to those three areas that we talked about, you probably miss it. So that's just one area. But, again, I think it's so fundamentally important for marketers to begin to really think about what is their formal listening infrastructure, and that's what the Convergent Edge tries to do, especially as we talk about AI, especially as the world moves to artificial intelligence.
So let's talk about AI for a second, because having been in the technology business for a number of years, I've seen AI defined about 10 different ways, depending on what year it is. And it's almost like, to me, AI is the next generation of technology that we don't know what to call it yet. And then we adapt it, and then we say, oh, that's AI. Now we have things like Alexa and Siri and the Google Home, et cetera, and those are sort of AI assistants, and we have AI in other places. But where do you think we're going with this, and how do we get to the convergence edge with AI? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so I think AI will be probably the most transformational technology we've seen in a long time, maybe ever. Where we're going is the majority of decisions that will be made by businesses and by individuals in their day-to-day lives will be impacted or greatly influenced by AI. That's where we're going, right? We're going into – if you just listen to – or watch any elementary school kid come home and do their homework. What's replaced asking mom and dad? I'm asking Siri, right?
Yeah.
You can see that's where we're going. Now here's the thing: inclusion in diversity. What does it mean in a world with AI? Is a fundamental question that marketers and everybody's got to ask. Because if you bring your biases with you in the AI, we are really in trouble. We already know if you're a woman in tech with the same qualifications as a male in tech, with all of our good intentions, you still are getting paid 22% less. With all of our good intentions. If you take those same individuals and you take non-diverse individuals, predominantly in the male gender type, predominantly from one part of the world, and you allow them to program and create the AI that will power the world, if you do not belong to that gender type or you are not from that part of the world, you should be very concerned.
Wow.
Because all those biases are going to come forward. And so if you're a marketing professional, I always say, or business professional, anyone, you know, there's some fundamental questions you should be asking about AI, right? First, what decisions are you going to entrust to AI? Secondly, how have you eliminated bias in the data? You don't need to be a data scientist, but you need to ask that question. How have they eliminated biases? And the best way to get at that is ask them, show me where the AI has made an incorrect decision and tell me why.
Yeah.
Right? Tell me why. And the final thing I think from a marketing perspective is marketers have got to understand and decide, are they going to let people know when they're dealing with an AI or when they're interacting with a human? There's a lot of folks right now that are chatting away and thinking this is great. This customer service is answering my question at, you know,
it's a bot.
Any time that I want, and it's a chat bot, right? And
yeah.
They have no idea. They have zero idea. And I think there's going to be, as a marketing professional, I think you really need to be clear on when you are going to notify your customer at what point in that process that they're dealing with an artificial intelligence versus a real human. I think that's going to become really important because once you deteriorate or hurt that trust, it's going to be really, really difficult to gain that same momentum again.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I think there's a fear of AI. I mean, maybe it's the, you know, going back to 2001, A Space Odyssey, and, you know, and Dave, you know, Hal takes over and says, I can't do that, Dave, right? So you have this computer who takes over. And so there may be some of that fear, which I think is a bit irrational, but how do we make sure that we aren't unleashing something that is going to be dangerous? I mean, this whole idea of you know, a certain, you know, male, you know, perhaps white males of a certain age programming things that don't allow for people of color, don't allow for women, don't allow for people from other countries to have different answers or different data is really kind of scary. So how do we make sure that we keep this kind of monster under control?
I think, number one, we're having conversations like this, right? And again,
yep.
it gets to formally asking the question. I think, too, you know, there's been a lot of work done around bias. I don't really like the term unconscious bias because in my mind, when I think about unconscious bias, it's conscious because I've told you about it. So you're aware of it.
Yeah.
I just told you, you now need to do something about it. I think the data sets are critically important. That's the fundamental. You have to clean up the data sets. If you bad data in, you bad data out. Biased data in equals biased data out. So if you're going to use an AI program to determine judicial sentencing, we already know if you're an African-American male, choose the same crime, you're going to get 20% longer sentence.
Right.
We got to clear up and be clear on the data. And I think whether or not you're a data scientist or not, really probe and say, tell me where that AI has made the wrong decision. Because only then can you get to the details of really understanding. So therefore, how are we going to account for this? I also think that you got to adopt what I call a digital humanism, humanistic point of view. I could consider myself a digital humanist, which means that, you know, technology is there not to replace the human spirit, but to augment it. I think you have to take an approach that says, together with AI, we are going to make better decisions. I don't think you need to take an approach that says all of decisions, it's all or nothing approach. We want to take humans out of the loop. I don't ever think I think you need to think long and hard before you do that. Especially when the ramifications of that decisions, of those decisions, could involve the loss of human life.
Yep. And even we look at some of these AI being used in medical decisions, and you know, some of it is fine.
Yes.
But if we ever get to the point where an AI system makes the wrong decision and someone is injured or dies, then we have a problem, right? And we have it with driverless cars too, right? There has to be a point where
we do.
Yeah, someone says, gee, there's a bicycle crossing the street in Arizona, and I need I can't rely on the car. The car isn't stopping and not wait until someone's been hit. So there has to be this involvement of people. We can't just rely on machines to rule the world.
Yes. I think, you know, accountability will always rest, I believe, with humans. Machines can't go to jail.
Right.
She can't get punished. I mean, I think, you know, the bottom line is that you can't afford to live in a black box society. You have to understand, you don't need to go to a whiteboard and be able to draw out all the intricacies of the technology. But as an example, if a autonomous vehicle is put in a situation where it has to choose between potentially swerving off the road and hurting or injuring or killing the driver versus hitting a pedestrian, how does it make that decision?
Yeah.
Somebody we've got to really understand how that decision is made. And you may, which I believe you will come up to, is you will sit down and say, maybe that's a decision that the person driving the car has a profile upon which there's certain tolerance levels that they're comfortable with this machine making decisions based on a set of parameters. But you got to get to that point of understanding. If
right.
you don't, you're running the risk of really, I think, losing faith. And again, without a doubt, autonomous driving, you're going to reach a day and point where already your kids, you're going to see, you're going to say, you can't believe that person is, you know, see somebody driving today and you go, I cannot believe they're on their cell phone, right? It's a big,
right.
don't drive cell phone. Well, pretty soon you're going to say, I cannot believe somebody's driving.
Right.
What are they doing?
Look at that. That old person
right.
is driving.
Right. Exactly. What, I mean, what are these humans thinking, right?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? You're nuts. So, you know, we're going to get there, but we just have to be clear on what decisions. And again, you know, those decisions are what questions are we fundamentally asking? And we're so much in a pace. We're so much in a society to just execute. Einstein said if he had 60 seconds to save the world, he would think about it in 50 seconds and execute the last 10.
Mm.
We're just the opposite right now.
Yep.
We're just the opposite.
So let me ask you, in today's world, I don't think we can rely on government or those types of institutions to come up with the guidelines for this because, A, government's going off in another direction, and, B, they're just not that knowledgeable about the technology. Who are the right people to come up with these questions? Is it a council of suppliers like Cisco? Is it someone like the Teslas of the world that are implementing it? Where do you think that this kind of understanding of how to come together and create the right parameters is going to come from?
Yeah, I think that the short answer is everything in life now from a business perspective is not about an individual. It's about ecosystem lifetime value. You
yep.
know, you get to school, it was all about customer lifetime value. Now it's fundamentally about can you build a sustainable ecosystem where each and every participant has a voice, is fully participating. The difference between diversity and inclusion, right?
Yep.
Diversity would be a diverse, yes, we've named all those players you just mentioned. You got manufacturers, you got service providers, you got technology companies, you got security companies, you got government, you got the citizen. That's one thing, yes. But the question is, you may have them all on a piece of paper, and their names may be in a footnoted fashion. But are you truly driving full participation? Are they participating in a manner that is optimal, and we are ensuring that we're giving a voice to everyone? I really do think that is going to be the new measure of success. I think ultimately, you know, how do you guarantee that? Well, those products and those services that do that will be successful. I think ultimately the market will determine that, and quickly you will see the amount of investment put towards true, open, inclusive, and diverse innovation, I think is going to increase exponentially, because the fact of the matter is no single individual has enough knowledge to be able to ask the higher value questions. And that means that you have to devote time. I mean, if you just, you know, it's amazing what assumptions we put in terms of we know what the problem is. So therefore, how many meetings do you go to? And we know what the problem is. So let's get solving it. And you don't know what the problem is. And the reason that it's a really good indication for you to determine if you know what the problem is if you find yourself asking the same question year after year, month after month, quarter after quarter, stop asking it.
Right.
Change the question. But it's a, you know, in this day and age, it's thought of as being, oh, you know, you're not executing, you're wasting time, you're not moving forward. And I think it's just the opposite. I think it's so important for you to get on that right track so quickly.
And that brings us back to where we started, which is that you've got to be doing questionnaire. You've got to be asking the right question.
Correct. That's
right. Absolutely. Wow, this is fantastic. We've been talking with Joseph Bradley. He is the author of Questioneering. And Joseph, can you just give us, where do we even start? Just one place that, if you say, gee, I want to start asking the right questions, where do I go to get started on this?
Yeah, so, we wrote the book Questioneering, so you can go to questioneering.net. It's a great place. You can purchase the book on Amazon, obviously. But practically, one thing you can do right now is the ask methodology that we talk about in the book. So pick a question that you think is really important. That's AIM. Pick what you believe to be the right question. Surprise is ask yourself, why do you believe? What are the assumptions that you hold to be true? What are the things you hold to be true that makes you believe that's the right question? And surprise, ask yourself, what if they're wrong? What if those assumptions are incorrect? And then Kindle says, once you started with your question, your core question on the left, now you've surprised, you've gone all the way to the right. Ask yourself the three whys to get yourself to that high value question. So you aim, get focused, you surprise, challenge your assumptions, and you Kindle, you ask why.
That's wonderful, fantastic. A new approach, which I think all of us could benefit from. We've been talking again with Joseph Bradley. Joseph is a global VP for Digital and Internet of Things at Cisco. He's a senior research fellow for the Global Center for Digital Business Transformation, IMD, and he's the author of a book called Questioneering. So thank you, Joseph. What a fascinating discussion and lots of things to think about.
Thank you so much.
Okay. This is Linda Popke. Until next time, thank you for listening to Marketing Thought Leadership.
We hope you enjoyed this edition of Marketing Thought Leadership, brought to you by Leverage 2 Market Associates. If you'd like to find out how powerful marketing results can transform your organization, contact us at www.leverage2market.com.